verlieren. Little thing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Anya Nyman, and I'm excited to introduce the fourth program in our series, The Political Mandate of the Arts, organized by the Student Council and presented in partnership with the Vinda Museum, the Thomas Mann House, and DubLab Radio. The Student Council consists of a team of high school, undergraduate, and graduate students who invite prominent guest speakers to discuss topics relating to art, culture, politics, and society. This year, in conversation with artists of all kinds, visual artists, musicians, dancers, writers, theater and filmmakers, cultural critics, curators, and others, we explore how the arts can make a difference in times of social and political crisis, how art provides new perspectives on social issues and shapes local communities, and how artistic freedom and autonomy are both of social and political significance. We warmly welcome our viewers on Zoom, as well as our listeners. Today's interview will be conducted by Student Council members Gianna Machera, Lexi Tooley, Natalie McDonald, and myself. For our first three interviews, we invited conceptual artist David Horvitz, Kurdish-German rapper Ebo, and Palestinian poet Gayath Almadun. Our colleague Gina will put the links to those recorded interviews in the chat. Today, we are thrilled to welcome as our guest speaker, dancer and choreographer Heidi Duckler. Heidi Duckler is the founder and artistic director of Heidi Duckler Dance in Los Angeles, California, and Heidi Duckler Dance Northwest in Portland, Oregon. Titled the reigning queen of site-specific performance by the LA Times, Duckler is a pioneer of site-specific, place-based contemporary dance practice. Through the use of expansive techniques that encourage us to understand how dance and embodiment in space can be a tool for many purposes, Duckler has contributed to redefining the field and has created more than 500 dance pieces all over the world. Duckler has also been the recipient of numerous prestigious awards, including the National Endowment of the Arts American Masterpiece Award, and the 2021 Oregon Arts Commission Fellowship. Most recently, her film, Where We're Going, has been selected for first prize by the Cine Danza Festival jury amongst 28 other films from around the world. Currently, Duckler is on the faculty at the University of California, Santa Barbara in the Film and Media Studies Department. For some logistics, today's program will start with a 45-minute discussion moderated by Gianna, followed by 15 minutes of Q&A with the audience, which Lexi will moderate. As the interview progresses, please feel free to put your questions under the Q&A box at the bottom of your screen, and we'll get to as many of them as we can. Please try to keep your thoughts short and concise, no more than one or two sentences, and please just put one question at a time. Your questions can be submitted at any point throughout the interview. Finally, we would like to thank Susan Horowitz and Rick Feldman for generously supporting on-site and online discussion series at the Vinda Museum. And now I'll turn it over to Gianna to start our discussion.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the beautiful introduction, Anya. And I would love to welcome Ms. Duckler. And we are all very excited that you could join us. To start off the questions, I would love to ask a question about your history and experience with dance. And was there any specific time in your career in dance that you realized that you could utilize dance not only as a form of expression and movement, but also, in your words, as a tool of awareness?
Oh, well, that's such a great question. And a tool of awareness is something that we really teach, because to increase your sensory perception and your awareness of your surroundings is really the basis of my practice. I feel like dance for me is subjective and participatory, and inspiration can be found everywhere we look and go. And the role of the artist is to help make us more conscious, more aware of ourselves, to expand how we see the world around us. And in order to do that, we remove barriers, barriers to access, and we build skills and tools that help us to express ourselves. So I have kind of a methodology that I teach to help people develop sensory awareness in their bodies in relationship to each other. So one of the fun things that I like to do is called acts of noticing. And so we take time to kind of do a 360 around the space and notice all the things that we find around us, way down low and way up high, and we activate our senses, and as we explore the space, we explore each other and we notice each other, and then we share that information that we've discovered. And so I do that. Actually, I've been doing that at Martin Luther King Community Hospital, the whole campus, where we've been artists in residence for the past 5 years. And on May 20th, we'll be there doing that in very slow motion. And you're all welcome to come and join us and partake in our slow dance.
I really love the way that you said,
I hope that answers your question, Gianna.
Oh, it definitely did. I love the way that you said inspiration can be found everywhere and that is your form of expression, and you use it to explore each other, and it's not just a one person movement, it's multiple people, but also within yourself. And I think Lexi has a really great question that can build off of that about dance being your form of expression, but also the term democratic dance.
Yes, thank you, Gianna. And I believe we kind of touched on this a little bit, so I'll ask my follow-up question after, but what makes dance such a special medium of expression for you as opposed to other forms of art?
Well, that's a beautiful question. And I think that it's because dance is about the body, and that's what makes it so democratic. And that's the thing that we all share, because we all have bodies, right? We're bodies since we were born. We all came out into the world with bodies, and we probably all came out in the world screaming. And so it's like a language that doesn't need any words. It's a universal way of communicating. And then because we have bodies, we can all move. But we need agency over our bodies. And so, you know, when we work with our bodies, we work with ideas like such as freedom and disparity and activism. We work with ideas like abortion rights and creative expression. And, you know, these are the things that that we don't have in repressed societies that we, you know, that we can't express. So I'll give you an example. I did a work in the Lincoln Heights jail, and we wanted to give our audiences an experience about what it was like to feel restricted, but also an awareness that they're playing a role, you know, because they weren't really in jail. In reality, they were free. So when they came up to the jail, we fingerprinted the audience as they arrived. And then we sent them to an insecurity station, and an opera singer sang, I am the lock and you are the key. And there were projections in the cells that sort of teased them, you know, come back soon. But what really happened, and this is the thing about dance and about art, is that sort of, you know, it's sort of that, it sort of plays with fiction and fact and fiction and the friction between those states. So the audience was transported in a freight elevator to return to their cars. And for some unknown reason, the freight elevator got stuck in between the floors. And so I was whispering in this freight elevator. I was like, don't worry, you know, we're getting help and it's gonna move again and everything is gonna be okay. But for some reason, they all decided to sing, We Shall Overcome. And so that's that, there they were, you know, like, I don't know, 20 people stuck in this restricted space that they found themselves for real. And then that's the kind of interesting thing about my work, is that you never know what will happen. And they all wanted to talk about it later, about this kind of experience that they hadn't anticipated. So anyway, those are the kinds of things that happen when you create work in different sites and with different elements, such as.
Well, thank you. And you kind of touched on this, but you spoke about the freedom and expression and kind of the democratic dance. And that was so interesting to me when I first read it on your website. So could you tell me a little bit more about some of the issues that you've explored through democratic dance?
Yeah, well, so many. And, you know, because a lot of the work talks about stories of human experience and underrecognized people and their undertold stories, and work that happens in historic places that are often forgotten or abandoned. And, you know, I'm trying to think of an example to tell you about that sort of thing. But I guess, you know, like, for instance, well, when I was in Long Beach and there was a goal to do something there about vacant land. And so I worked with architect Alex Ward, and he built with scaffolding that filled the vacant land. And I did the story of Cain and Abel, and that was an expulsion story. And then I realized that every culture has its expulsion story. And so in Long Beach is the largest Cambodian community outside of Cambodia. And so I asked them if they wanted to collaborate, and they did, and they told their expulsion story about their exile. And then we traveled around Los Angeles, and we went to Little Bangladesh and the Mexican community in Boyle Heights and the Armenian community in Glendale, and eventually to a Native American community in Portland, Oregon. And every group told their own expulsion story in their own way. And I think that was a really interesting project that occurred and kind of came into its own, so.
I love the way that you talk about stories, because previously you mentioned that dance is about the body, but you also talk about telling stories of not only people, but places and how they're from the past and the present, which connects not only the body and the mind when it comes to dance. And I think that Natalie has a wonderful question about your work and its relationship to memory, which is the mind, and it also being a political act.
Thank you so much, Gianna. Yeah, so I think you kind of touched upon this, Heidi, but your choreography has been described as revealing truths about historic landmarks, reawakening abandoned places. So it strikes me that memory, the way the past and present are entangled, is a really important part of your work and important aspect of your site-specific performances. So I was wondering if you can speak to the way that your work engages with personal and or collective memory, and how remembering is possibly a political act.
Yeah, That's a wonderful question. It does. I do think about memory, and my pieces do refer to memory quite a bit. You know, a performance is only one day, but it can awaken memory and connect the past and the present, the future. And, you know, the past is both inherited and also constructed. So, you know, we remember, you know, we imagine it in order to remember it. And I think a good example might be an early piece I did in I don't know, maybe 2000, was a work that I did at the Ambassador Hotel. And I had no idea at the time that it would be demolished. It was closed to the public and in a state of disrepair, used only for filming. And there were sort of three entities, LAUSD, wanted the property for school, and the Kennedy family, they wanted the property torn down, and the LA Conservancy wanted to save the property for its historic legacy. So each group wanted something entirely different in terms of, you know, its preservation or non-preservation. And so I worked with my board of directors, and we were somehow able to get all three groups to agree to a performance as a way of bringing the public to the location and enjoying sort of an experience that would lead to a discussion about looking at options and talking about viability and what mattered and what really mattered. And you know, so that was an incredible opportunity, and went on for quite a while, and more people came, and it was really the performance was really an inspirational tool to think about how we consider memory and how we consider legacy, that was a really fortunate performance. But of course, it the Ambassador Hotel really is a school now, and not really didn't really get saved. So, you know, you never know about the outcome.
Well, that's a wonderful example. Thank you so much.
Of course.
I love the way that you talked about how you chose not only the location but also the dance to spark discussion and idea and inspiration within your audience. And I think that Lexi has an amazing question about how both your location affects both your audience and also your performance.
Yes, yeah, sorry. So my question was, how are you able to reach such a diverse audience? And I guess we could start with that one. I have a follow-up after.
Well, a lot of our audience, some of our audience follows us to wherever we go, because, and some of our audience is new audience, but the work that I do, you know, I never create somewhere else and then transport the work. The work is always, the content is always created on site in the, wherever we're making the work. Sometimes I've heard people say, you know, I've walked by that spot so many times and I've never seen it, you know, seen it that way before. And I think that, you know, when you subvert a space or a place in a, or use unconventional, you know, sites, you see things from different perspectives. So we have very different audiences all the time. And then a lot of the work that I do is a journey that the audience takes with us. And that's part of the experience, is traveling and noticing and all together. And so, you know, there are always different audiences, but we're always all together in shared space, and traveling up in an elevator or down an escalator or into new space is part of the storytelling, and that can be rewarding. And even liminal spaces, they add to the narrative. and connect to the architecture and the history of a place. I guess, you know, yeah, it's mostly what I can tell you about. Our audiences are very important to us and very connected. And, you know, I think it's a lot of it is sort of experiencing your private self in a public space, and having an experience where not everybody can agree upon. And that's kind of the beauty of it. Everybody has a different perspective and a different point of view. It's always sort of a non-static, changing situation. That's kind of beautiful.
Well, thank you. And for my follow-up, I guess you touched on it a little bit, but do you believe that occupying unconventional spaces such as laundromats, aquariums, and car washes provide a unique artistic experience for your performance or for your performers and viewers? We just had a previous guest, Ebo, speak about how she utilized unconventional spaces to express her voice. So would you recommend other dancers and artists to pursue this kind of creativity and experimentation and expression?
I do. I think it's wonderful. And especially those non-heroic spaces, you know, that you mentioned, the laundromats and gas stations and parking garages. I think that those are really interesting spaces to explore. I did a performance called El Enchanto, and it was a performance in a huge abandoned pool in the Santa Monica Mountains. And both the audience and the performers climbed inside this huge pool together. And I think those shared spaces are really important, where you have a really interesting experience. And sonically, the huge shell of this pool served as a musical instrument in the story of kind of abandonment and decay and the regeneration of new life. So I think that that's a really strong situation when you're in shared space. When you're in a theater, you're assigned a seat and you're told what to do, where to go, where to sit. And, but when you're in a site-specific situation, you have to think for yourself. And you have to find your place, and you have to make sure that you can see, but you also have to be sensitive and have an awareness around you that others can also have a good experience and are able to see too. So I think that sensitivity and awareness that has to happen in those situations is something that is really important to honor.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Of course.
So I definitely agree with what you're saying. And I love the way that you talked about how you choreograph your piece in where it's going to be performed. You don't choreograph it and then move it. And that the sites are so important and so essential to what you're choreographing and what your vision is. And I think that Natalie has an exquisite question talking about the location and how they specifically influence your work.
Thank you, Gianna. Yeah, so Heidi Duckler Dance is active both in Southern California and the Pacific Northwest. I was really interested to learn that. And so I'm wondering how the themes, concerns, questions motivating your site-specific dance differ between these two regions.
Oh, I love that question. And I'm so attached to both of those, to both California and to Oregon, and there's so many similarities. Well, they share an ocean, right? But there are differences too. I mean, in California was built on, you know, a kind of a gold rush mentality, and with dreams of opportunity, and even today it remains. It's kind of a place of fiction, and but, you know, with people with sort of mad schemes but brilliant potential. But then, you know, underneath all that incredible talent, there there's also, you know, these kind of, there's also some terrible things like systemic racism and misogyny and anti-Semitism and inequities, violence. I mean, you know, it's really behind the screen. And then in the Pacific Northwest, where I grew up, it's much more laid back. It's a forest where time moves more slowly, and memory kind of grows like moss. It's everywhere, but it also has a dark side. But it's just a smaller pond, and battles are maybe less transparent, or more transparent maybe. But both cities are so beautiful, and they're just complex environments, and that's why I love exploring them. One is very wet and the other is very dry. One's a desert, one's a forest, but they inspire me continually, and I love making work in both places, and I have, you know, of course, family in both places, so I'm very rooted and in both places, it's interesting to uncover, and I'm inspired by both places. So thank you.
I love how you said memory grows like moss. I just think that's the most gorgeous statement. I'm going to remember that. So thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's really interesting the way that you talk about the history of both places. And you mentioned that Cali has an amazing history, but it's also rooted in marginalization and other systemic issues that we see present today. And I think that Anya has an amazing question when she talks about the possible relationship between homelessness and your work, which is a current issue today.
Yeah, I think that might be Natalie's question.
Yes.
Shall I ask?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, okay, yeah, perfect, absolutely. Okay, so another question, I guess, that actually does kind of follow up about regional specificity, I guess. And so thinking about Los Angeles and spatial justice, which I know is one of kind of the priorities of Heidi Duckler Dance. For me, kind of the first thing that comes to mind is the houselessness crisis. And so I'm wondering how the company has engaged with houselessness and or how you might imagine doing so in the future.
That's such a relevant question. That's a great question. And, houselessness is about place also. It's kind of like just like the turtle that carries his house on his back. We all search for, you know, where we can live and belong. And we all have feelings about where we are and where we want to be. And in our world, we need to sort it out. We have a big problem ahead of us. And right now we're in a crisis about it. And there's so much inequity in our world. And one of the pieces that I work that I'm looking forward to creating in 2024 is at the Herald Examiner building in downtown Los Angeles. That it's a historic building, and I want to address some of these issues because it houses now Arizona State, which is a fantastic place. And so I want to sort of look at the students now that inhabit the building, the historic core and the historic, you know, beautiful architecture that's been preserved in that building. But also across the street are very fancy new hotels. You can go up to the rooftop and get a, you know, $20 cocktail. But then on the sidewalks, there are people living on the sidewalks, you know, and there's that. And so there are all of these different, ecosystems of cultures of people living so differently from one another. And I think that will be a very interesting exploration of all this. And I sort of working title is, Herald and Examine Throughout. So I'm looking forward to working on that.
That sounds Yeah, that sounds like a wonderful performance, and I look forward to it.
Definitely agree with Natalie. That sounds very exciting, and I love the fact that you're willing to recognize that important situation that is going on today. Before I move on, I would like to ask you guys to put any questions that you have in the Q&A box. We will be starting very soon. So anything you want to ask, please put that in. And I'd like to bridge from another present issue to go to COVID, which is also a current issue that we are still facing and the aftermath of that. So I'd love to pass it to Anya this time. She has a beautiful question about the possible effects that COVID had on your work, since it is so site specific.
Yeah, like Jana said, we've kind of been talking about history, but now more the present. And so I'm wondering, given how site specific and physical your work is, if you can reflect on how COVID restrictions changed your work, or especially your thinking on your work, on thinking on location and thinking on your creative process. And then now that things are opening up again, what impact has COVID continued to have on your work, if any?
Right. Thank you, Anya, for that. Yeah, during COVID, you know, performances were not allowed. So, and our offices were also closed, and our business was in jeopardy. And we had to transfer everything online, which, you know, as a company that is based on connection and people and gathering and all of those things that couldn't happen during COVID, we had some huge challenges. So we started to teach online, which was very challenging. We had never done that before, but we got better at it as we were faced with it. And then we experimented with doing, I did a crazy thing called a Zoom specific piece that we invented. We figured out we could change the backgrounds in Zoom. So we got a set designer to design the backgrounds. And then we started to, you know, I realized that we use our hands a lot, you know, on Zoom. And so I started to create a one word for one person and then put the second person in. I could send that, I'd record that and then send it and have a duet. And then we did the whole thing on Zoom until we had, like, I don't know how many people, but 11 people, maybe all dancing in this one shared space. And, you know, so we just kept challenging ourselves. And then I started to explore film, dance films. I had made films before that, but not in the same way. And I became very interested in creating dance films, and that took a lot of my energy and interest. And so that was really great and creative. And then we did a series called Cooped Up, where we could really talk to people and have discussions, and they could share their films also. And that was very successful. And then finally, when we could return to a more normal life, then that was an adjustment, you know, because some people wanted to continue the remote life. And we, although we needed a balance between health and safety, and, you know, we as a company, our feelings of belonging and, you know, acknowledging shared space and trust and collaboration, we really felt that we needed to come back. And so there was some major shuffling in the balance. And that's when we started our salons here in our offices, and featuring local artists in different disciplines, and slowly but surely kind of got back to, you know, curating things. And we also started some outdoor festivals because people felt more comfortable in outside, understandably so. And so we have two big outdoor festivals now called Ebb and Flow. And they are based on they're based on climate change. And so different artists produce work that bring attention to climate change. And so that is something that we're very interested in, and we are still working on today.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
I love the fact that you brought up climate change, because it is another prevalent issue within our current society today, and how COVID led to outside festivals, which led to discussion on that climate change. And I think Anya has a really amazing question that focuses more specifically on climate change and how it has an effect on your site-specific performances.
Great.
Yeah. You talked a little bit earlier about how you kind of deal with change in the spaces that you are dancing within and working within, but I was wondering if you could elaborate on how you reckon with the changes to those sites over time, especially in relation to things like climate change that kind of not only change, but might fundamentally threaten the sites in question and the people that inhabit them.
Right. Because sites are sometimes like a moving target in a way, you know? I remember one of the sites that I used was a construction site, and we always use what's there and try to be very, careful. We don't want to damage anything or, unknowingly cause any hurt. But, in a construction site, we're using what's there. And then the next time we come to a rehearsal, it's no longer there because it's a construction site. So, that's the thing about making site work is that you really learn how to adapt. Because the sites, we're subverting them in different ways, and they're made for other usages. So, as sensitive as we need to be and resourceful, we really, it's one of a great quality to learn. And, out of COVID too, of course, we learn how to adapt. And that's the key to our survival, is learning how to adapt.
I love the way that you talk about how we're constantly adapting and we're constantly moving forward, and something that you may not have, that you had yesterday, you may not have today, and you have to move on and you have to keep growing. And I think that that's an amazing lesson that we can give to our, that you can give to our audience, because I feel like it fits into everyday life and we can all learn from that. And I would like to ask one final question, but before I do that, please put any questions that you have in the Q&A. We'll be starting that in 5 minutes, so we greatly appreciate that. Anything you want to ask? And I'd love to ask, what is the biggest thing that you have learned through this adaptation of doing site-specific locations, and what can you give to our audience so they can also take that message with you, with them?
That's such a that's a hard question to answer, of course. But I was just reading something today and about how the ordinary can lead us to the sacred. And I feel that that's really true, that we can find something so extraordinary in the ordinary and so meaningful in the smallest detail. And it goes back to that aspect of taking the time to notice things. And of course, I think that that's, a beautiful approach to the human condition, is to just, find those little small details and to understand that there can be so much beauty in just a grain of sand.
That was really an exquisite message, and I really appreciated talking to you today, as we all did. And I would love to pass it to Lexi, who will do our Q&A today. And please, as a reminder, put any questions you have in the Q&A box.
Thank you, Gianna, and thank you, Heidi, for everything you've said so far. We can start our Q&A with a question statement by Martha Copeland, asking, have you ever experienced masking your face and trying to get the expression in your body to really come across? It is an interesting exercise.
That would be a great exercise. Fortunately, I don't have to mask anymore. but of course, you can always, use so much of your body besides your mouth. So there is everything from your breath to all kinds of parts of your body to express yourself. Your eyes, especially, or I think that when we did have to wear masks all the time, that we did probably use our eyes much more than we did before. So there's always a plus somewhere, you know? I don't know, my dad used to wiggle his ears and used to tell us a lot from that. So you'll find a body part to communicate with.
Yes, thank you. Okay, next question. Have you experienced with organizing performances in more affluent and poor neighborhoods? And if so, what are the most striking differences in experience and reception?
I think people are people that, you know, they love to be with other people. And I don't really see a difference so much as they really want to be with share experience and they want to be able to communicate and share their feelings with one another. And, you know, I think that given they want opportunity and access all people to all things. And it's really important. We used to have what we call a duck truck that we would take around and give opportunities for people to play and dance in. And, you know, and then now we have what is called a dance mobile. And it's sort of a 70s bright canary yellow convertible. And so it's important that, you know, that people, because sometimes they don't have transportation to get to, you know, to art and theaters and so on. So we come, we go, we, you know, we travel, we go to them. And it's really important that that there's no barriers to art making, to, you know, being able to make art and see art and participate in art. I think that those are really important things.
Thank you. Okay, I've got another question from Selma Duckler. Do you see your dance and themes affected today by political attitudes?
Constrictions and conservatism and those things that sometimes people don't understand the value of art and dance making, of expression, of the freedom that we have to say what we want. That they're, you know, like, well, look at all the books that they're prevented now in the schools from reading. That's terrible. So, you know, yeah, that's really doesn't make any sense. You know, people should be free to be able to express themselves and have access to the information that they need and the tools that they need to be the kind of artist that they want to be. So yes, of course, you know, governments can prevent that. And that's a sad state of affairs.
Thank you. You touched on the idea of expression and I guess freedom earlier in your in our discussion, but have you ever had to deal with negative reactions in the moment during one of your performances, particularly during a performance that might have been more politically charged?
Well, people do have strong feelings about things, and I think that's great to talk about that. I haven't, not really. Most people are really happy to be in the world and to be, you know, our performances are really about engagement. So they're pretty excited to be there and we kind of lead them around and let them, you know, experience them however they enjoy experiencing them. You know, I had a funny thing happen to me when I was doing, when I had a performance at a laundromat. And so we were performing in the laundromat and a man came in with all of his clothes that he wanted to wash. And we said, you know, the performance is about 20 minutes long. Would you mind waiting to do your wash until it's over? And he said, no, I'm going to do my wash right now. And we said, well, there's another bank of washers over here on the other side. You know, can we offer you that? And I said, no, I want to do my wash right here. It's my right. And I'm going to do my wash right here and right now. And we said, can we pay you to wait and do your wash a little bit later? No, he said, I'm doing my wash right here, right now at this washer, and I don't care what you do. So we said, okay. So I said, so this gentleman is going to be in the show. So he just did his wash in the middle of the performance and it was great. Everyone loved him. He was wonderful. So I think that, you know, you just have to kind of at some point be accepting of what happens. And that's the thing about site work is a lot of accidental things just occur and you can't control them.
Well, speaking of site work, Gianna just sent me a really interesting question and she asked, do you feel like your sites and stories have changed or evolved as you've grown as a choreographer and as a person?
Yes, I do. I do. I think that's a great question. And I think we all grow and evolve as a person and as an artist. And I think that, you know, in the beginning, I was more focused probably on the locations. And now I'm more focused on the community. And that's so much a big part of the locations that they're inclusive. And they, you know, the community is such a big part and every location is different because of the community in which it exists. So I'm very much more aware of that. I don't know if that's me as a person or the climate of our world, but you know, hopefully as an artist, that the more art you make and the more you learn and the more you're open to learning, that we all do grow and change.
Definitely. Okay, another question. You mentioned liminal spaces earlier in our discussion. How do you define liminal space, both physically and metaphorically?
Such a good question. Well, liminal space are all those transitional spaces. You know, they are the interesting spaces because they lead you somewhere else, right? That's the hallways, it's the doors, it's the passageways, it's right here. It's all the things that you may not think about, but and you know, and metaphorically, there are also liminal spaces that lead you to ideas, that lead you to other things that you hadn't thought of, that the bigger picture. So yeah, I think you should all talk about that. You should have that as a whole separate discussion.
Oh, I'm sure we could talk about that for a long time. And similarly, there's so many connections. But do you think that culture in general and dance specifically can be a connecting tissue in times of political polarization?
I do. Absolutely. You know, I think so. Because the thing about dance and art and culture is that there's no one way of looking at it, right? There's so many different perspectives of what we've been saying. And so I think that that's a great thing to have when you talk about politics, because I think it opens up, hopefully it opens up our way of being, our perspectives and our way of communicating and our way of listening. You know, I think that listening is so important, and we could all listen a little bit.
Definitely. Okay, another question that we have, social and political awareness play a central role in your work. Do you find it sometimes difficult that dance can be a rather abstract art form, which might make it tricky to make this social / political connection, or is there maybe no contradiction at all?
Well, it depends on what kind of dance you're talking about. You know, some dance, there's so many different kinds of dance, but I just think that when it comes back to the body, body's not that abstract. You know, it's pretty real. And like Martha Graham says, the body never lies, right? So you can learn so much from the body, the way it communicates and what it has to say. And even if you think, well, you know, I don't understand, you might say what this is about. Well, maybe you understand more than you think. Because it is the body talking and it is a language. It's a physical language that that we can all respond to. And there's not any one way of knowing, you know? There's not any one body. All of our bodies are completely different.
Thank you. And another question. Is getting audiences to see the mundane / ordinary with new eyes a political act?
Yes, it is a political act. I don't know, you know, if more needs to be said about that, but I think that it absolutely is a political act because we're definitely not all the same, right? Yeah, I think that, you know, and that's the other thing about creative expression. And sometimes, you know, old school, you know, they taught dance by imitation, or they taught dance that they wanted all homogenous, or they wanted everybody to look the same. You know, that's not possible. I think that, you know, belief in our differences, in our individuality, is really key to, you know, to self-expression. So, yeah, I guess that's good.
Yes, thank you. Perfectly answered. Okay, another question. Have you worked at all with disability versus able-bodiedness in any of your work?
I really haven't. And I welcome it, but I really haven't. So I'm not an expert on that.
Yeah. Speaking of any welcoming work, do you have any advice for any aspiring dancers or choreographers or artists in general?
Experiment. Try new things, you know? There's not to say what works and what doesn't. And there's nothing wrong with failure, you know? If that happens, then try again. Try something else. Just keep trying. Experiment.
Definitely. And along those lines, who are some of your favorite artists or influences that are not necessarily, or I guess they could be, but dancers or choreographers are outside of that realm altogether?
Well, I don't know if I want to say names, but, you know, I read a lot. I read all the time. So I'm oftentimes, sometimes, you know, things get translated. I can read something and then think about it in terms of choreography, or I'll see a great movie, or a painting, or, you know, talking with friends. There's all kinds of things that can inspire, trigger thoughts or ideas about making a new dance that may not have anything to do with dance per se, but they just might be ideas that you want to try. So, you know, they might come from friends or be inspired by, you know, by anybody really. It doesn't matter. You never know what you're thinking about. I was just thinking the other day about the wife of Bath and how important a character she was in Chaucer. I was just thinking a lot about her. So sometimes certain things trigger other things. And I'm sure I won't be choreographing the wife of Bath, but it'll be something about that idea that will find its place in a new work.
Very interesting. We have another question from Anne in the chat, and she says, as a climate activist, I'm wondering if you are working on any climate change pieces to increase the discussion, awareness, and activism, and where you would possibly want to perform these.
Well, we send out an RFP for local artists to apply for the Ebb and Flow Festival, and we've selected 7 different artists to participate. And they'll be at the State Historic Park in Chinatown. So you'll have to come. It'll be in June. And I don't know all of them, but their work sounds fascinating. And it ranges from visual art to music to dance. And they'll be all over the park doing different kinds of things that will focus on climate change. And I think I'll make a piece too. I don't even know what yet. But I'm really excited about that festival. So I urge you all, it's a free festival, to come and enjoy yourselves. And it'll be interesting to see how different people look at climate change differently and what they want to say about it. So we'll see.
Great, thank you. And for one of our final questions, another question from Gianna. She said, I love the way you talk about dance as a language and how everyone has their own. How do you translate between different dancers to encapsulate your message in the piece, but also have them maintain their own true selves and language?
That's great. Sometimes I, well, you know, when I'm choreographing, I oftentimes don't show movement so much as talk about what it feels like or the kind of, or imagery, you know, like when, like the other day we had, I had a dancer and she had this beautiful kind of cape and she wrapped it around. And I said, oh, wrap it around as if it's like the, you know, the skin that, you know, was covering your body just as you were born, and then let it trail down just like a snail. And then you, and then let that thing, you know, just like that little slug and the little trailings of a slug when it, you know, on the ground, and it just stays behind and you leave that little markings behind you. And she said, oh, great, I got it. And so then, you know, then she could do that. And she did it beautifully. I wouldn't even have thought to do it like the way she did it. But, you know, those are the kind of conversations that you have that you trigger those images and those thoughts and my brain to her brain. And I don't know how it got translated, but it did. And it was beautiful what she came up with. So sometimes it's surprising and you have to like let those things, you know, have some space so that they can be intuitively expressed.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, that totally answered. I mean, John, I believe that answered the question. But I just wanted to say thank you. We're slowly running out of time. So I was just saying thank you so much for coming and speaking with us today, for your presentation and for everything. I've definitely learned so much about art and expression and dance, and I just had a great time. But before we, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I had a good time too. And thank you so much for inviting me.
Of course. But before I wrap up, I just wanted to announce our next interview in the series. It'll be Wednesday, May 24th at 4:15 p.m. with guest speaker, Mr. Stephen Levine, who's the president of the California Institute of the Arts. And I believe it was just pasted into the chat to register. But yes, thank you so much to everyone that came and Ms. Tuckler for coming and speaking with us again. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.